Welcome to Continued Success, another Friday in the books. I'm Justin Clue, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports.
Hello. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, kind of. It's been another sad day in the baseball community. Of course, we've seen a seemingly endless line of legendary baseball players and even just beloved baseball players pass away in the last calendar year, probably a little longer at this point. And honestly, Liz, with the passing of Henry Aaron today, I was trying to remember. I'm at the point where I can't remember offhand how many people in baseball have passed away in this time, like just in baseball. It's crazy. It's devastating. It's every day. We did Tom Seaver and Dick Allen, Jay Johnstone, Dick Sutton recently. I mean, I know I'm forgetting people because you can't keep track anymore. It's been a very tragic time in baseball, and today was no different at the passing of Henry Aaron.
Yeah, it's depressing, but this is sort of the period we're in. Like, there's a lot of good baseball players who are getting up there in years, so we just sort of have to, you know, you sort of want to spend time appreciating them before they go, but then it also feels like, well, this person's about to die, so let's spend some time appreciating them before they die. That's morbid. So, you know, what was it, like 8? Hall of Famers passed away last year. That was just Hall of Famers. Like, that didn't count Dick Allen.
Oh, yeah, right. Gosh.
Yeah. That's like, in and of itself, that's shitty.
Yeah.
The fact that we have to note that is part of what makes it so difficult. So, Henry Aaron is getting a lot of love today, and it's nice to see.
He is, yeah. It's there's always an outpouring of community just memories and people like writers who had interactions with these guys will put up a story that maybe they haven't told publicly before, and it's nice to see. Obviously you don't want to be in this situation at all, but I did go back and look at Henry Aaron's numbers against the Phillies, but I got to tell you, it's just in a way, it's kind of useless because, like, did he hit .318 against the Phillies throughout his career through 357 games? Yes. Did he hit 76 home runs against them alone? Yes. Did he played at the Vet? He played at Connie Mack. He had .325 at Connie Mack. He had .277 at the Vet in only 20 games. But, like, I say useless because, you know, some of these guys, you go back. Tom Seaver was a great example of this. You go back and you look at their numbers against the Phillies and you know, that stands out against other teams in the league that, like, oh, wow, they really, you know, they were an all-time legend, but they were really good against the Phillies. And part of that is because the Phillies will just go out there and field a
stink it up.
Just a pile of empty shoeboxes for a team for like an entire generation. They'll just do that. And, that means when one of these Hall of Famers comes through, they can just kick right through them. But in the case of Henry Aaron, you just look at his numbers and you're like, yeah, he hit .325 against the Phillies. He kind of did that against a lot of teams.
Yeah, like, the Phillies aren't special. He was just really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, he has the third highest batting average against the Phillies of any team in his career. He hit .326 against the Cubs, slugged .589 against them, and .319 against the Reds, slugged .604 against them, .312 against the Giants, .311 against the Pirates, .308 against the Cardinals, .302 against the Dodgers. I mean, he hit .300 against like all these powerhouse teams and the Phillies from these eras of baseball that he played in. And yeah, it's a testament to, I mean, did you know that he was an all-star every year of his career, I think, except the last one and the first one?
I did not know that.
And he played.
I'm learning a lot about him today. It's good.
He played 23 seasons, and yeah, he was an all-star every season from 1955 to 1975. 20 straight all-star appearances. He only won one MVP award in 1957.
God. Yeah. That's like an indignity.
Yeah, and he never. I don't know when the Silver Slugger started, but he won 3 Gold Gloves, but no Silver Sluggers either. But he was always
among. To assume it doesn't exist.
Right.
Otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. And the first year when he wasn't an all-star, he finished 4th in Rookie of the Year balloting behind Wally Moon of the Cardinals.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who that is. I have to admit. Ernie Banks. in mm-hmm. Chicago. Gene Conley, his teammate in Milwaukee.
Oh.
Do you know who that is?
No, I don't.
I don't know who that is either.
I thought you were luring me into a trap because I don't know who that is. I know a lot about old baseball players. So.
I had not heard of Gene Conley. He's a pitcher, apparently. Apparently a good one. Apparently a better one than Hank Aaron that first mm-hmm. year in the majors. I guess what I'm saying is I am in awe of Henry Aaron's output. And like you obviously are. I mentioned today on Twitter, he's one of the first names that you learn as a young baseball fan, at least like from our generation, from other generations, sure. But when we were growing up, he was the all-time home run leader. And now he is, you know, he is not, Barry Bonds is, but he's still the offensive leader in so many different categories. But I'm just like, when you learn about baseball and like, wow, home runs, like, wow, I wonder who's hit the most home runs ever. And someone's like, well, it's Henry Aaron. And you're like, oh, so he's like, what, he becomes very... you become very aware of him very early, and then he just kind of like lives in your head as a baseball fan. Like, yeah, it's Henry Aaron. He's one of the best baseball players of all time. But you don't really look at the numbers a whole lot. So today, I think a lot of people were looking at the numbers and looking at, like, I looked like the all-star appearances and everything. And he's just got a baseball reference page that looks like a chessboard where it's just like so
it
much.
It looks like a mistake, really. It looks like the looks like the keyboard got stuck on the number 3 a whole lot.
A lot of bold squares in this grid. Still the all-time leader in RBI. Still the all-time leader in total bases. Sorry. I always think that's touched bases. It's like that's in my head. I mean, that makes sense, right?
It's kind of a neater way to say it. I like it.
See? Yeah. I invented a stat today,
Look
Liz.
At you. It's a big day.
Yeah. The very, very sad day, but also just a good day to remind yourself of just how incredible some of these players were. And they're icons for a reason. And for reasons more so than just what they did on the field. I think Henry Aaron was also just a big... he wasn't afraid to talk about the racial component of his success. And I found an article today when I was just looking for old things about Henry Aaron that in which he's like pretty candid with a reporter. I feel like it was 1974, so it was near the end of his career. And he said, you know, that he was saying that progress has not moved fast enough for a black baseball player. He said, I don't think baseball has moved as far as it should have since Jackie Robinson's time. And he said he talks about that with his sons. He says, I have two boys, Henry, 17, and Larry, 16. And when I sit down and talk with them, the only thing I feel I can honestly say to them is you can play 20 years and then you go to the back of the bus again. You can play for 20 years and give them all the service you are capable of. And then you have to forget about it. There's no place for you. No future. So, yeah, he definitely, you know, he talked about that.
That is heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. It is. Absolutely. So a lot of stuff like that coming out about Henry Aaron today. That's, you know, that's been out there, but people are of course talking about it today. And it sucks that it takes tragedy like this to like go back and do this kind of appreciation. Like, yeah, we could have looked up these stats any day, but you're not necessarily motivated to do so. And it just sucks that like it takes a day like this to really go back and be in awe of his statistics. So. Another tragic day for baseball with the passing of Henry Aaron. Really putting a dent in dry January, Liz. You doing?
God,
you
I gave up. I gave up that first week. It was over. Sorry.
The Associated Press tweeted today that the annual dry January for some has been more moist than usual amid the pandemic and political turmoil.
I thought about that today. I'm just like, you know, why don't these pants fit anymore? Why? And well, it's because I've drank through most of our Helms supply of alcohol in the last month because it's been very stressful and upsetting.
Yeah, we're having a moist January, Liz. You know, it's another health approach. You know, we're not having a soaking wet January. We're not having a booze drenched January.
It's just a
moist January. Yeah, me too. I'm doing that. We're going to finish recording. I'm literally going to go buy beer after this. So yeah.
I almost drove. They have like one of my favorite beers at a place about a half hour away. I almost drove today. I think I'm going to do it tomorrow instead. Like I'm just going to drive because they have a beer that I can't get around here often.
Yeah, it's got to happen. You know, we kind of said, "Well, wait till the inauguration, and then we'll take it from there."
Yeah, I'm just gonna do February. It's gonna be dry February. I ordered an exercise bike.
It can happen any month. We don't need this January crap. And frankly, it's a terrible month to do it. You're coming off the holidays, and yeah, maybe you're feeling a little like, okay, I indulged a lot, but then. You know, that also just means you got some good momentum. You want to carry that into January, yes. Not stop abruptly. Like, that's not healthy.
I just love, like, with the inauguration coming up and knowing what we knew about Donald Trump, we all still thought dry January was a good idea. Like, any of us were going to make it through. Like, in retrospect, that was stupid. In retrospect, it should have been February with a one-day break for Valentine's Day.
We're so stupid.
I say that all the time.
Thinking we wouldn't be drinking. Come on. That's
honestly. As I say, you only live once. Every drink you don't have is a drink you may never have.
It's a drink down the drain, frankly.
Yes. Time, just, you know.
It's wasteful,
very
frankly.
Very wasteful.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say speak. I was going to say it's a Phillies podcast. God, what do you think? We're not drinking? All the time?
Seriously.
Come on. Here's something that popped up right before we started recording. The Washington Post confirms a Bob Nightingale report that Ryan Zimmerman will return to the Nationals, the only team he's ever known pending a physical, big league deal with incentives. I was trying to avoid saying his name because I always forget how to say it. You know who I'm talking about? Barry
No, oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. I'm not gonna try.
God damn it! I knew how to say it once, and I've forgotten.
Zvrluga. Yeah.
Insulting and classless and everything.
So sorry, we have respect for you.
We sure do, but you don't listen, so it's not
sorry.
Gonna matter. Point being, Ryan Zimmerman back with the Nationals. Now, remind me, was he had he like officially retired? Had that actually happened? That you remember?
Did he? I don't. I was just trying to remember. Like, did he opt out?
I remember it being
to him.
It was brought up. Retirement was brought up as a concept a lot for him, and I feel like it has for like the last 3 years. Everyone's just assumed, then he's just like, "Nope, I'm back. Nope, I'm back."
He's like the he's like the Drew Brees of baseball, except you know Drew Brees is good.
Right, and I feel like there's some Nationals fans who would take issue with that.
I mean now.
Yeah, no, you're right. The thing is, yeah, no, he did not play in 2020. I believe he opted out. He played in 85 games in 2018, 52 games in 2019. Those were full seasons, by the way. He's got to be 36 years old right now, or he's going to be 36. He'll be 36 in September. So
he is 36 now.
He's 36 now. So he'll be 37 in September. And he's back. And, you know, his last All-Star season was 2017. He only has one other All-Star season. That was 2009. He's been a little more than just around the NL East for the last 15 years. You know, he's been a good player for the Nationals. He finished second in Rookie of the Year voting in 2006, gotten a couple MVP nods, one Gold Glove, two Silver Sluggers. Yeah, he's been a pain to have to play against on occasion. I don't know. I guess what I said, Ryan Zimmerman's coming back. What was your first reaction as a Phillies fan?
Who cares?
I was afraid you'd say that.
Sorry. I still have trouble taking them seriously because, you know.
The Nationals.
Yeah. Well,
the last team to win the World Series in a full season.
They still, like, Ryan Zimmerman is part of that because he's been around forever. And he just, to me, personifies the little brother status that the Nationals are always trying to overcome. Like, Philadelphia as a city has a pretty serious inferiority complex. The Nationals as a baseball team have that. And, you know, D.C. doesn't really have that at all. But, like, the Nationals, I feel like, are always constantly trying to prove themselves. And, like, Ryan Zimmerman is part of that. So I'm just like, whatever.
I never thought I would ever see another team with a bigger inferiority complex than the Phillies. I never thought I would see it. Than us. Than Phillies fans. The Phillies community. I never. No one likes us. We don't care. No, we care. We care a lot. You can just tell. We would never admit that, like I just did. But you can see it in the reaction anytime someone says Philadelphia is less than good, and we're all like,
"It's the best place in the world. Fuck you.
I hate this place. Fuck you.
I hate saying it here. That. You shall not. I'm the only one who gets to crap on this city."
Just a bunch of just feral, open-mouthed Philadelphians pasted against the bay window of your living room. Just you know, mouths open like aliens against the glass. Just, fuck you.
God, it's like, oh, God, that zombie movie with they're in the bar. I can't remember it.
Go ahead, get there. Go on. No. What else?
Zombie movie, they're in a bar. It's the best friends. I can't remember anyone's name.
You talking about Shaun of the Dead?
Yes, I'm talking about Shaun of the Dead. Thank you. I only own it on Blu-ray.
I like to make people who can't remember movie titles like really work hard. But you know, we only have so much
How
time
nice of
on,
you.
On the podcast. So
I deserve it. I can't believe I didn't remember that.
I guess the Zimmerman thing, what I'm really trying to say is how much the Nationals annoy me, or how annoying I find them, I guess. Because even in that update, I've always felt like the writers who cover the Nationals are really big Nationals fans. You just always get that vibe, you know, from Tom Boswell, who is just always, he's a columnist. He's always been, and he's had some really shitty opinions over the years, but he's always sounded like a really big Nationals super fan. To like all these people, you just always got the impression these people were really into the team.
Because they get defensive at a moment's notice.
Yes.
Like winning the World Series was the most important thing to this team because they didn't, despite being good, they weren't the best, and they just needed to get there so everyone would take them seriously. But unfortunately, that's not how it works. At least not with me. I feel like the best way to combat them is to pay them no mind and let them stew in their own juices away from us. Because just recognizing anything they say just validates them for feeling like the most saddest, least loved team. No one likes us. You're right.
It's like
no one likes you.
It's like walking away from a tantruming child in the toy store, just being like, you know what, I'm out. You just have your little tantrum. And the World Series title is like, all right, just buy them a bike so they'll shut the hell up.
That's exactly what it is.
And I guess even in the news about Zimmerman there, that it's like it gets mentioned like the Nationals, the only team he's ever played for. And I know they refer to him as Mr. National, and it's just like this wonderful thing.
They?
Ryan Zimmerman, he is just, he's always played for the Nationals. He's been around since like when they became a team. And I can see like the narratively pleasing aspect of this and the fact that he's been a really good player for them and a team leader over the years. But man, I'm just sick of every narrative thread attached to this team. And I guess we just see more of them because, you know, we're close regionally, we're in the same division. Every thread with this team is just viewed as though it's some kind of inspirational sports movie all on its own. You know, every part of it is just like the most magical, the most wonderful, the most exciting thing to ever happen to baseball. I mean, I love Juan Soto. It sucks the Nationals have Juan Soto.
Yeah, it does.
Here's this awesome young slugger. They're going to build a team around him, presumably. He comes to the plate. He punches himself in the dick until he's worked up enough to hit a home run. And then he probably does. Just an awesome, awesome young player. And it just sucks that the dumbass Nationals Twitter account gets to tweet about him all season long. I think it was the most satisfying part of 2020 when the Nationals tweeted that, like, oh, it's really easy to beat the Phillies, or beating the Phillies isn't as hard as Phillies said. I forget what the exact thing was. They're playing on
that famous. They've stepped in shit numerous times. They've been hoist by their own petard so many times because they can't resist trying to own us. It's just like, guys, that's adorable.
And if you told me that the Phillies would then beat them like the next six games they'd play them, I would not have believed you. I would have been like, yeah, you know, and then that account will have like, you know, more of its little gibberish to get out there. And no, instead the Phillies just beat them. It's like the next six times they played there. And that was really, really satisfying moment of the 2020 baseball season. But that being said, like this news of Ryan Zimmerman coming back, it's just like, oh, this hallowed, wonderful thing is happening to the Nationals, and that a man who will be 37 during the regular season has rejoined the roster. Yippity dippity doo. It's just go fuck off.
Yeah.
And like if the reporters were to respond, they would be like, I'm just saying, like, what is happening? I'm just saying he's coming back to the team. That's news. I gotta say that.
I hear in your voice the slight hint of
and some might say that's
tolerate it.
Some might say that's me. That's my problem. But I say in fact that it is your problem.
It's your choice to take what we're saying however it is you're saying it.
You are the one with the problem. I am the one who is totally fine. I think you could listen to any episode of any of these podcasts and understand that
we
and see
can
that is
poke
true.
You with pointed sticks. It's your choice to respond this way. You know, in another 50 years, maybe you'll be used to it like we are. Like Phillies maybe. Fans are bred to be defensive automatically. Not even Phillies fans, just the city of Philadelphia. Phillies fans have been through it enough to, I think, you know, we're used to people shitting on the team, but the city, like, you can't bring it up even close to something negative. And the city of Philadelphia acts like the Nationals all the time.
So that's my useless gripe of the week, I would say. So let's take a quick break here. We'll get into some other stuff that's going on. We'll talk more about the 2011 Phillies season and how that was developing around this time 10 years ago, right after this break. Well, Liz, you and I have definitely been a part of conversations over the past week or so about the Phillies' acquisition of Archie Bradley in their bullpen. The one-year, $6 million deal the Phillies paid to acquire the former closer of the Diamondbacks. He spent some time with the Reds in 2020. Right now he's slotted in as the Phillies closer. It's a move I think most people are on board with. And he did a little press conference. He was wearing a Ric Flair themed Christmas sweater not too long ago. He said he was fired up. He got on Twitter and asked who from the Phillies community he should follow. You know, he's basically, it just reminded me of the last time a free agent came here mm-hmm. and began immediately trying to ingratiate himself with the fans. And I'm not saying I don't hate it at all. I think it's awesome. I think it's hilarious. I can simultaneously look at our behavior as like, you know, sometimes borderline pathetic, but also just hilariously receptive to any kind of attention.
Yep.
And also the fact that a player is excited to be here and it's cool. Exactly. And like he's participating and like that's awesome. I mean, right now it did not seem likely that anybody would come here who was particularly like really jazzed to be in Philadelphia specifically this offseason. And Bradley's nailing that. So I just wanted to talk to you quick about this. Not so much the Bradley and what he could do for the Phillies. I think we're all pretty aware that you know, he's been a great closer before. He's had good halves and bad halves to a lot of seasons. So if he can get stabilized and be in the back of the bullpen for the Phillies, then that's going to be something that the team could really use. And it's cool to see that they were willing to pay, you know, at least a little bit for somebody who can do that. I'm more interested in talking about what we were just saying, the pandering aspect. Mm-hmm. How much pandering is enough pandering? How much pandering is not enough pandering? Is it worth our time to invent a word like fandering in which a player Ooh. Is pandering to fans, or is pandering already, does that already cover that
I
pretty
simultaneously
much?
Love and hate that. Okay, like good. At the same time, I love it and I would like it to become a normal thing. But I also hate it, and I can't tell you why. I don't know why. I think we're good with pandering, though. I feel like we're getting to the point with Archie Bradley where it is actually becoming, what is it, fandering?
Fandering,
yes.
Yes.
I feel like this is a specific form of Phillies pandering where you realize what easy marks we are for anyone to express excitement to be, you know, the Phillies have not been exciting. Like Bryce Harper was exciting, but those seasons got successively less excited, like less exciting as you went on as they continued to lose. So it's nice to have someone who's excited to be here and reminding us that, hey, the team is not filled with losers. There are some good guys on here, and Archie Bradley is excited to be here, and we're fans and we're great, and it's okay.
How does this compare to Bryce Harper's arrival in Philadelphia? Silly question. I'm going to phrase that.
It does not compare at all.
I'm going to phrase that a different way. Okay. Is it fair to say that no one has come here and started pandering in the way that Bradley has since Bryce Harper?
I think Andrew McCutchen did a little of this type of thing, but it definitely was in a less needy way.
Kutch was like, I'm putting my stuff out there. You can kind of respond however you want. But, like, it's all very wholesome and funny and well done. So, like, you will enjoy it. But, yeah, it was less like, you know, hey, gang, who likes these sunglasses and stuff? It was just, like, you know, funny stuff. Howard Eskin gave him the Uncle Larry character to
Uncle
work
Larry.
With.
Yes, Uncle Larry. You know, it's just different. Like, he's fine to be himself. And, you know, welcome Phillies fans and give them a little bit, you know, of love in what he's doing. Archie Bradley's like, this is my personality now. I am Phillies guy. Anybody, my wife, my family, they all must know. This is who I am. I will stay here forever.
I'm going to tell you something and you're not going to like it. I apologize. I apologize for putting this in the news. I've been keeping this to myself for weeks now, but then there was a development, and I feel like I have to say it out loud. So like many of you, I was somebody who ordered one of the Uncle Larry bobbleheads from the company that was making those, and it's awesome. It's not really a bobblehead because his head doesn't bobble, but it's of Andrew McCutchen. I'm sure everyone has seen it, wearing the Saturday Night Special throwbacks, like doing that pose that he famously did over the 2019 season when the Phillies wore them once. And, you know, it's great. It has kind of a little platform. It says Uncle Larry on the back. Awesome. Best Phillies thing. I think earlier this winter when the Phillies were being disgusting, I actually said, like, I think my Phillies fandom now is like a DVD of their World Series win and this bobblehead. And, like, that's it right now. So I bring this up because, you know, a couple weeks ago, the bobblehead just kind of fell backwards on this table. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't fall off the table, just fell backwards on the table and snapped right at the ankle.
Oh no.
Right at the ankle. And then, you know, I was disappointed. I was really frustrated. I moved him, you know, he was helicoptered on a stretcher, a tiny little helicopter. It flew him into another room, and I just kind of laid him on a desk where I was like, all right, I'll try to find some, like, glue or whatever to repair this. And he was sitting on that desk for a while, and like most things on a to-do list, it just never got done. And then I think I'll blame the cat, knocked him off that desk, snapped his other ankle.
Oh, God.
At what point is this an omen? What message am I receiving? Is it the one that it definitely seems like it is? Is there any decoding necessary? Should I not have spoken this into the universe? Should I, like, ask Kutch what I should do?
No, I would not. This is, you're not to put this in writing anywhere.
Okay.
This is a safe space. Everyone listening to this podcast understands that you're not trying to put this in the universe, but it's hard to ignore the signs. You don't know what that could mean. Let's just watch and find out. Let's try not to assume anything that would make us feel very terrible.
At this point, I don't know if I'm strong enough to be the only person living with it. That's why I'm telling you.
Okay.
And I guess
this.
Everyone listening.
Now you don't have to be. Now you're not alone. And so when it happens, if it happens, or when it obviously will not happen, we could say, oh, well, look at that. See, it was nonsense.
When what happens? Nothing.
Actually,
nothing.
Exactly.
It's nothing. It's just, it's unrelated to anything else.
Everything,
regardless of what something has been built to represent, what things could metaphorically or directly mean, just meaningless. Meaningless, nothingness, nothing. I agree. You know, it's like, I bet for a lot of people, this part of the podcast just got, like, through some digital glitch, got erased, and they won't even hear this part. Yep. And right around the 30-minute mark, they'll just hear us talking about whatever we're going to talk about next. Oh, here's a question. The Phillies tweeted out a video of Jose Alvarado, a new pitcher that they also acquired this offseason, working out just as like a, hey, he's working out. He's wearing all this Phillies gear, and I know that's very normal. And it just brought to mind this question in my head that I guess I've had when previous versions of this kind of like content has come out there. Do guys on a team show up at the workout facility in a bunch of Phillies gear, like, just because? Like, or do they have to do that when they're like, oh, we're going to shoot a video, come wearing your Phillies gear?
Like, that's a good question. I would think maybe it's because it's video. But baseball is also really funny about that type of stuff. Like, what you're supposed to wear at what time. You know, the manager wears a uniform.
That's
like,
so silly.
It's a very it's a very strange sport with things that they do that have no real meaning behind them other than that's how we've always done it. The end. So if he has to go there wearing that every time, that's fucking ridiculous. But it could also be true.
You know, I saw in the background somebody else was just like walking around and they are also wearing like a red, you know, Phillies stuff. So I was like, I wonder if you got to like show up, if you walk into the facility in any way, you have to be wearing Phillies stuff just in case you wind up in the footage of something. I don't know. I know that's not super interesting, but it definitely came to mind today because, you know, there's just so much Phillies stuff going on that you have to keep that in mind. Jose's a big dude.
Yeah.
I'm taller than he is, so you know, take that. But he's 6'2", but he's like 245 pounds. He is a big guy. So he's got a lot of power. And I honestly think he might get lost in the shuffle here, assuming the Phillies, you know, they're gonna make some more moves. And honestly, you know, whether they make moves in regards to Real Muto or Gregorius, or whether they make them or not, you know, that they made them or that they didn't make them will be the biggest news of the offseason. And then after that, we'll be like Archie Bradley. And then after that, we'll be like what they do instead of those guys if they don't get them. And then after that, it'll be Sam Coonrod because of, you know, his backstory and all that crap. Jose Alvarado might get a little lost in the shuffle as far as, you know, new pieces, which is a shame because he does have a story arc that trends toward positive. And he is a lefty, and he's going to be a great example of what Caleb Kodlum is able to do with the Phillies pitching staff in his first year as the pitching coach. So, yeah, I think he might get a little buried as far as Phillies narratives go. And, you know, that's good and bad. It's not necessarily either of those things. It's more like, okay, this guy without like a big spotlight on him is going to be able to put in his reps and, you know, potentially be an effective reliever. But I guess my point is I'm just really interested to see what comes of this deal. And, you know, it might be a little harder to find because there's going to be a lot more high profile stuff in the way. I don't know. I mean, do you think about the Phillies acquiring Alvarado a whole lot since they've acquired him?
No, I haven't. It's beyond like the really big role players. Like, I don't think about those types of guys. I am excited to do so when spring training starts. I'm excited to pay attention to them. And I hope that they'll have their moment. If they have, you know, if there is a story that can be told about them, I hope, you know, one of the beat writers finds it and tells it. But I think it's okay if he gets lost. The most important thing is that he's successful. Like, if he's good, he'll get recognized. You know? I think that's probably all.
Honestly, for a bullpen arm, it's the best you can hope for.
Like, if there are expectations on you, that's a recipe for disaster. It's better that people don't even know you're there until you step out onto the mound, and even then.
I mentioned the other day that with his like big beard and this positive attitude, that Archie Bradley was kind of reminding me of Sean Doolittle.
Yeah.
And then I heard someone else say something about like, oh yeah, well, Sean Doolittle's got to have a bounce back season this year. And I was like, bounce back season? It's Sean Doolittle. Looked at his stats. His like big all-star season was 2018 when he had a 160 ERA through 43 games. 2019, his ERA was over 4. 2020, he had a 587 ERA. I mean, he finished the league lead in games in 2019 with 55, but still, I just hadn't realized that Doolittle had been struggling. And you know, I bring that up because even when you are a reliever that gets a lot of attention, like, and you're worthy of a lot of attention because you're having a great season, that can change so fast, The guys at like the top of the game like that in the bullpen aren't really going to, you know, the long-term success in the bullpen is scary rare. And if you're somebody who can just be a valuable contributor, typically, you know, being a lefty helps you a lot there, then you're somebody who you can somebody just be like a small engine out there, just chugging along, getting outs and sitting back down. Man, it's going to be a low bar for success out there in the bullpen this year. And, you know, some projections, I know Megan Montemura wrote about this in The Athletic, indicate that it still might probably not be a good bullpen, but it won't be the worst bullpen since 1930. It won't be the worst bullpen in the major leagues, but it's, you know, potential. The potential's there that it might not be a strength still.
Yeah.
even with the adjustments they've made. So if you can just be Jose Alvarado, show up, be a lefty, get your reps in, get your outs, listen to your coaches, you could be one of the Philly success stories in the bullpen. And I don't want to hear a lot from out there, because I just want it to be like, okay, it's part of the game, and they get outs and the other team doesn't score, and Brandon Workman's not here and Heath Embry's not here, and, you know, the games just end and the Phillies win more of them because their relief pitchers aren't blowing it. Like, that's all. I don't need it to be big and flashy. I don't need a bullpen solid. Full of Archie Bradleys.
No. Like, it just needs to be solid, because they, you know, bullpens fuck up. That's, relievers just do that. It happens. Every player does it. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that the bullpen is good enough to overcome that, so the failure isn't what we're primarily noticing.
Right. I want them to be known for more than failure.
Yes.
That's a good bar. Absolutely. Yeah,
being known for just... you know, not fucking up all the time. Like, because they were so bad last year, you're right, the bar's going to be very low. And if they manage to make it through, like, a couple of weeks without a massive blow-up, people will be talking about it.
Yeah, if they make it through the first week, I think,
the
without a massive blow-up.
The bar is below the ground. The bar is approaching the core of the earth.
Hey, speaking of time frames, right before we go on our second break here, how many weeks away are we from the JT Realmuto news, whether it's with the Phillies or not? How far away? Days, hours, weeks?
I think we're weeks
months?
Away.
Weeks. Okay. Yes. 1 to 2, 3 to 4, 5 to 6.
I was actually thinking about 2 to 3.
2 to 3.
Yes, I don't
All
think
right.
1 week is enough. 3 weeks seems almost too many, but it's still close enough to when spring training's going to start that they could sign him.
Are we foolish for thinking, like, it seems like free agency is loosening up a little bit. We're seeing some more signings. They're not all blockbuster signings, but we're seeing some more signings here and now. Even just, like I said, even the news like Ryan Zimmerman is coming back, like that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's not all huge, but you're starting to see a little more movement. And then, you know, the most recent Realmuto news, I think, was, you know, like a week ago at this point, but it was that the Phillies had a new offer out to him. And I guess you could consider the Realmuto Braves rumor also technically new, maybe just an update. But that didn't really catch on as far as a big concern. So I guess, are we foolish for thinking that, like, all of this has meant that an announcement could be coming soon? Should we be logging on social media in the morning and demanding that the various Phillies accounts should announce that they've re-signed JT? Or are our expectations need to be a little further along, you're saying? Just not the most far along.
The mistake is expecting something.
Darn it! Yeah, I'm always doing that.
I can't make it clearer. You can't be disappointed if you don't expect it to happen, ever. Like, the moment it happens will be when it was supposed to happen. And that's just what I'm telling myself. Every day it doesn't happen, it's because it was not supposed to happen today. That's it. That's the only way I could keep sane, because otherwise I'm just going to become a crank yelling at the Phillies Twitter account all the time, knowing that I'm just accosting the poor people who work there, who have no say in anything.
You know, in looking at that Jose Alvarado video, I realized that they have, like, 3 tweets in the past, like, not a lot.
Yeah.
They don't tweet a lot. They tweet when there's, like, an announcement. They addressed Zoo with Roy when he did a little MS Paint of Archie Bradley. You know, it's obligatory stuff. I'm not complaining about it. They obviously tweeted about Henry Aaron today. But, like, you can't tweet a whole lot, because everyone just inundates them
yes.
with sign JT, sign JT, shine JT.
It's incredible how united we all are on this. It's not, because JT Realmuto is a great player. It has been a long time since the Phillies have had a catcher worth giving a shit about. So we want this. It's not unreasonable for us to want this. But I do enjoy seeing how united we all are, in that the only thing we all want is that. That's it. That is what we want, and we've made it very clear. Everyone wants this to happen. So just do it. That is the message we're sending. And I hope someone in a briefing, like the briefing report that the social media department had to send to Dave Dombrowski to get him up to speed, I would hope someone made a note of that. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you have to. It's kind of like the main narrative right now.
Like, I'm just imagining like color printouts of like just Twitter screenshots of just page after page, double-sided, of responses to tweets.
I bet you think there was nobody who responded with a JT Realmuto related tweet to their statement about Henry Aaron dying.
You would be wrong.
You would be wrong. There's a lot of classless dipshits out there.
And it's social media. I feel like
that's where they live.
I feel like expecting decorum is it's over expecting. You're not going to get it. It's a place where people can be totally faceless assholes, and so that's why we can't ever expect decorum. Really expect nothing of no one or anything at any time.
Another positive message from Liz Rocher and the folks at Continued Success. We'll be right back after this break. Well, Liz, like we always do on Continued Success, we're going to travel back 10 years into the past when we were young and vibrant adults and not, you know, hungover and tired all the time. No, it was 10 years ago, the 2011 Phillies were once again gearing up for this season. And we've been talking about this gear up for probably the last couple weeks. Obviously, Cliff Miss played a big role in this season and how the team was coming together. It's been a quiet couple of weeks, a little bit of drama here, a little bit of position battle statements there. And around this time, it's no different. Another steady pulse of regular Phillies news. People wanted Phillies coverage at this point, which was, you know, also interesting. The Phillies avoided arbitration with Ben Francisco, who is believed to be one of the top candidates, if not the candidate, to take over Jason Wirth's job in right field. We honestly believe that at this point. Poor Ben. He seemed nice and cool. You know, he was pretty quiet, but a nice, cool guy. And we were pretty used to seeing success stories. You know, the guy whose job he was getting was a guy who had worked his way up from a bench spot. So, and Francisco was always linked to Cliff Lee, which really helped, I think. Yeah. And we just believed anything could work because for so long, so much had.
Yeah. Imagine, just blind faith.
Yeah. And other possibilities were John Mayberry, maybe Dom Brown, that hot rookie. Ross Glode, perhaps.
That guy.
I think even Andrew Jones was mentioned as being available. Wow. Only 33 years old at this point.
It really was 10 years ago, man.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. Around this time, I found an obituary. A retired truck driver named Walter Dutrow passed away at the age of 78. He had played the Phillies home run payoff game through the Daily News religiously for decade after decade after decade. His name had been pulled a couple of times to actually partake in it, but in classic Philly sports fashion, Liz, never got a home run hit during his home run hitting.
Beautiful.
This poor man. Like, I don't know if that's better or worse. Like, for decades? Like, well, how does that happen? The odds just seem like it's impossible. If you do that religiously for decade after decade after decade, no one hits a home run when your name gets pulled. Because I know it takes a little bit. It takes that first level of odds to get your name pulled. And then that second level that somebody actually hits a home run for you. But at the same time, if he's playing it that much, wouldn't you think? But again, this is classic Philly sport. Just one of these years we're going to break through. One of these times. Not even like a full season of championship like sports playing we're talking about. We're talking about one guy getting lucky in 1 second. where a guy makes contact with the ball long enough on a just even a kind of a windy day, and the ball goes over the fence for this poor man who drove a truck his whole life and just wanted a fucking home run hit at the right time, and they can't even do it for him.
This seems like it's a metaphor for something, but I can't put my...
why do we do this?
For a second, I thought you were going to say, and of course... You know, his family entered his name one day, and he won. And I'm like, no, I don't know why I thought that. This is...
Oh, man, that's a Nationals story. That's not a Philly story. That's some Yankees-Dodgers shit. That doesn't happen here. Get the fuck out of here. Well, the only battles the Phillies would see on the roster would be right field and the bullpen, it seemed. Michael Stutes was still around.
That guy with the hair.
You and I always used to talk about Michael Stutes' hair.
Yes.
Every time he came up. He was good for a second or whatever.
It was fine. Yeah. On my birthday one year, I was with my dad and watching a Cliff Lee start, and he left early, and Michael Stutes went, and they lost. My birthday, and then we got stuck in literally 4 hours of traffic on our way back to Lancaster.
We gotta stop telling stories like that. Why is every sale on my arm? Right? I saw him pitch on my birthday. Yeah, he blew it. And then I spent 4 hours in traffic.
I have not seen the Phillies win a game in person in almost 5 years.
That's my bachelorette
party they did.
The odds.
When I got engaged at the stadium, Jacob DeGrom pitched a shutout.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just asking for it.
Honestly, like, it has been a long time since I've seen a win. Like, they love doing this to people. They love it. Whatever cosmic goblin runs the Phillies in the, you know, the big ownership cabal in the sky, this is the doom he visits upon us.
Hey, you got a nice little congratulations message from Gabe Kaplan. That's like a Phillies win.
Friends, every time you talk about Gabe Kapler, I expect some kind of auto message to pop up. In our Slack, we have auto messages that pop up every time we mention Gabe Kapler's name, almost as a way to remind us not to talk about him.
it had to be done for the sake of the company. Well, at this point, like always, the Phillies winter tour caravan was chugging along for all the stops they make in the minor league towns. Charlie Manuel, Ruben Amaro, Lakewood Blue Claws manager Chris Truby, and top Phillies draft pick Jesse Biddle were all going to be a part of it. Have you ever been to one of those?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, was that the Red Fanatic? Was he around at this point?
He was around. I forget how involved he was with this kind of stuff.
This was like the ramp up to spring training, or was that the ramp up to the season? I don't remember. It's the ramp up to one.
It was part of the Paint the Town Red thing.
Yeah, I don't remember. Then that's in the lead up to the regular season. Okay, I think so.
Then that's what it was. Yeah, I never went to one of those. It seemed, I mean, you know, you got to pay, I think, a significant amount to get in there. I think they like, it was a good entryway for a lot of like bloggers to get credentialed. Cause for a while the Phillies weren't credentialing, bloggers to like come to games and stuff. But that event, they would, I guess, occasionally let people in. I don't know, but that was like the gateway. And I don't know. I just never went, never really interested or aware enough to go to these things.
What are we gonna do there?
Eat spaghetti. Eat spaghetti in a hotel.
Yeah, I'm good. Are they playing baseball in front of me? Is that what I'm spending money for? Do I get to sit at their table and ask some questions? I think I'll pass that.
You're gonna hear Charlie Manuel talk, probably.
Yeah, but unless he's talking to me, I can watch a video of this later for free.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's fair. Well, a few days after Francisco avoided arbitration with the Phillies, Kyle Kendrick avoided it too. People loved avoiding Kyle Kendrick, it seems. He got a 1 year deal worth almost $2.5 million. He was headed to the bullpen, it was suspected correctly. Ruben Amaro had told Fox Sports that Joe Blanton would be pitching for the Phillies, probably for the whole season, which is a hell of a statement to make. That like you can just say, oh, he's going to pitch for us the whole season. Like, again, you can't speak this stuff into the universe. You can't do it. I'm sorry. can't say it sounds like that. I don't remember if Blanton got significantly hurt in 2011, but again, just a hell of a statement to put out there. Like, relax, we're not going to see Kyle Kendrick. Blanton's going to pitch for us the whole season.
Expect everything.
You know, we actually just talked about this when I asked you on another episode, who is the most impactful coach in your experience watching the Phillies, and you said Davey Lopes. This was actually the season he was gone. So it wasn't all good moves leading up to 2011, and the lack of his input at first base for Phillies base stealers would become apparent as the season would go on. In 2010, the Phillies stole 108 bases, which was fourth in the National League. In 2011, they stole 96, which was 10th, and well below the league average of 109. I mean, you know, it's not 108 to 96. I mean, that's like about 20, you know, a drop in about 20 base, and all their, you know, speedy guys got a year older and everything, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, at the same time, that's a part of being a successful team is being able to do a lot of stuff well, and base stealing is a big part of that. And just base running in general is obviously a huge part of it. And Davey Lopes found a way to make people better at base running, which I honestly think is pretty rare.
Yeah, it is. He deserved better. And I dislike that the Phillies haven't had good base stealing strategy since. And it's been a long time. Not that Davey Lopes would still be there, but it's just something that maybe most clubs aren't really caring about, but the Phillies just have not done well.
Yep. But where they did do well was installing the biggest video board in the National League to their stadium.
Metal guitar.
They may not have Davey Lopes, but they do have a giant television screen. It was $10 million to upgrade that thing to a 7,372-square-foot screen, the old one only being 2,759 square feet. I don't even remember. That thing would probably look so small.
Ridiculous.
If at this point, which is insane. But, yeah, it would look so small to us just looking out there. And I don't even remember. No. Like, I don't remember when it wasn't that, which I think is, you know, pretty normal. But I also just, that's such a huge difference. And I'm just like, did we used to squint when we looked at the Jumbotron at Citizens Bank Park?
I remember going in 2011 and being like, whoa, that is a very large video board. and the old one was just out of my head forever.
Yeah. And it got, actually, they moved it. They took it down and installed it at the spring training complex in Clearwater.
The spring training complex where all the Phillies hand-me-downs go.
Yeah, it was like they gave it a, it's like the equivalent of giving a guy a one-day contract to finish out his career. They're like, you can go down to the spring training complex. You can be that TV now. Mark Parent took over managing duties in Reading, and the Iron Pigs announced bobblehead giveaways for 2011 would be Ryne Sandberg, Harry Callis, and Dom Brown. The Phillies also had a pitching prospect named Donovan Solano get suspended for 50 games due to a positive performance-enhancing drug test. Reading also got a $10 million upgrade to First Energy Stadium. Just to run through the minors there real quick. I think one of our near future episodes of The Dirty Inning is going to focus on Ryne Sandberg. And yeah, it's so funny. Like, this was, I think this, yeah, 2011 was the first year he was the manager of the Iron Pigs. He got hired in mid-November 2010. And yeah, just one of the conclusions that I kind of came to, because the whole point of focusing on that for an episode was going to be like, let's, you know, we all can pretty much guess how we consider Ryne Sandberg as far as like them being a manager here. But like being a, he once described being a manager in the major leagues as like the ultimate. He said that was like, that was the ultimate. And then, you know, he got here, but I think honestly, at the end of the day, what he had imagined when he'd said that was that A, the team would be good, and B, the team would be the Cubs. And so like when he joined the Phillies organization after the Cubs passed on him and went with Mike Quatty for their management position after Lou Piniella left, the Phillies were great. The Phillies were like the best team in the National League. But by the time he got that big league job,
womp, womp.
they were literally bottoming out.
Christ, I got to work at this. I did not sign up for that.
Fucking sucks. Also, the Phillies scored 820 runs in 2009, and that had dropped to 772 runs in 2010, which was still somehow second in the league behind only the Reds. But it was clear to many what their days as an offensive threat, that their days as an offensive threat were starting to drop, and relying more on their rotation to win games was in their near future. So this was a complete shift from how the team had been viewed in 2007. Jimmy Rollins was, of course, like, nah, we're fine. He believed the team's weapons even without Worth, and and had spent the entire offseason recovering from an injury-riddled 2010 campaign. And to do so, he went through a yoga program supervised by his wife, which I find adorable.
Yeah. At this point, he was finally settling down.
I think Jimmy's a low-key wife guy.
He's awesome. Absolutely a low-key wife guy. He's definitely a... He loves being a girl dad. He's really enjoying it. You could tell on Instagram. He's just one of those guys who's just thrilled to have all these women in his life. It's just everything he ever wanted to be. You know, it works for his energy.
What did he say when you tweeted at him during a postseason broadcast that he was an analyst for? Didn't he like wink at the camera?
Oh, God, yeah. He did 2 years in a row. They put my tweet up on the... on the screen, and he was always, because he always looks so great. Great suits, you know, his head's all shiny. He looks fantastic.
He does, yeah. It's unfair. The man's got swag.
Yes, and that's really everywhere. You know, he's good looking, but when you add just his attitude and his aura, it's just like, yeah. Wouldn't you?
I love how I was complaining earlier in the podcast about a Nationals writer saying Ryan Zimmerman was coming back to the Nationals and complained that they all sound like total homers, and literally ending the podcast talking about how good looking Jimmy Rollins is on television. I know it's different. It's totally different.
It is 100% different. We're doing this out of genuine love, not because someone thinks he's ugly.
That's fair. Well, in 2011, Liz, it's something you noticed. Just, you know, we obviously do a lot of research for this, just going back and reading about what the situations were. You forget a lot, even just 10 years ago, even if it was one of the most memorable baseball seasons we'll probably ever experience. But something you realize when you go back and you're just reading all these old stories, A, there's a new story every day in the paper, at least one, if not more, typically more, just about something going on with the Phillies. Even if it's just a nothing kind of something, they knew people just wanted to read it. The Phillies pop up in sports columns all over the place. They were the gold standard in this city. And I think everybody knew it was temporary because Philadelphia will always by default be an Eagles town. But one of these teams occasionally just bursts through and can kind of take hold for a couple of years. And this was, you know, obviously close to the end of that for the Phillies. But it's in a way, it's just jarring to see how much coverage, how much love that this team was getting. You know, because we're so far removed from that at this point. So many articles opened with something like, even if it's not about the Phillies, like an article about the Flyers, it would be like, well, the Phillies may have it all figured out, but across the street at Wells Fargo, the Flyers need to blah, blah, blah. Like, they made it into like almost every article, even the stuff that that wasn't about them.
Of course.
And I don't know if I'm just saying I missed that or that it's jarring to see all this media coverage in a positive way about a team that's just been out of the spotlight for a long time.
It's incredible to think about. I remember at the time really enjoying it, and I'm glad I did because it wasn't going to be forever and we all knew it. And I'm glad I enjoyed it. I'm glad I knew what I was experiencing so I can look back on it and feel this way, because I don't feel bitter about it. You know, it's sad that it had to end, but this was a fucking amazing season to witness.
It was.
And being able to remember it just a decade ago is special. And this year we'll get to do that. Like, this is a point where the Phillies have a lot of highlights. There's a lot of Phillies highlights out there from this period because they were good all the time.
Yep. Yep. And I really look forward to getting into the actual season. We're still a couple of weeks away, but I'm really looking forward to, you know, because no matter what happens in our reality, we know that, you know, we have this 2011 season to go through that doesn't really let you down until the very end of the story. So I'm really looking forward to going through the next few weeks and talking about everything with this team for this reason, because they were just the toast of Philadelphia at the time.
Yeah.
Well, Liz, you got anything to add to our 2011 yearbook?
I do not. You've covered it.
All right. Well, then that will do it for this episode of Continued Success. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We'll have a new episode of that next week. And this podcast, Continued Success with me and Liz. Head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hittandseason to get even more content for just $5 a month. You get access to Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones. John Stolness publishes video content over there, and Liz and I do a monthly movie review of whatever baseball movie we can find for free online. Got a new one of those up right now. We just watched Trouble with the Curve.
It sucks.
More like Trouble with the Movie.
Oh, Justin.
They always say to end with your best joke, and I've done that. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.